So this is a MBTA Charlie card, which is it's got an RFID chip in it. I'm sure those of you who are local here have probably used them. You can load it up with a certain amount of money. When you go in, you tap the Prox card reader, and it shows you how much money you've got left on the card, and when it runs down, you can add more money to it. How do you add more money to a Charlie card?
I think you just go online or do it in the station at the little kiosks they have.
Yeah, how do you do it when you go up to the kiosk?
I have a monthly pass.
Yeah.
I don't know if it.
You tap your card on the, there's like a little black box. Tap your card, and then you can either pay in cash or on a card. Then you pay.
Or you can pay on a credit card.
The credit card, yeah, and then you pay, and then you tap the card again.
Okay, why would you... what in this context of this conversation would be the difference between paying cash and paying with a credit card?
If you pay with a credit card, then they connect the two, I guess.
Now, if you pay with a credit card, in theory at least, right, there is now a connection between this particular card, which doesn't have a number printed on it anywhere, but it's got a chip in it, so it's got a unique identifier. It'd be better, because otherwise how would they know, you know, what the balance was? And your name, address, and anything in principle that was also associated with that credit card that we just took out, purchasing history, for example. Okay? What kind of data does this card generate as you use it?
Trip records.
It records what stop you got on, what stop you got off, and to the microsecond exactly when you entered and exited. That data is not stored on the card, it's stored at the MBTA's, you know, computers, or the computers of whoever MBTA contracts out to do that. So now that all of your comings and goings on the T is now associated, if you used a credit card, with your name. There's a local group at one of the universities that runs a fellow who runs a card swap service. So he encourages people to dump spent cards in a little box outside his office and to take other ones to try to confuse Big Brother if Big Brother is in fact watching. Who knows whether Big Brother is in fact watching? Okay, but the data is potentially there to be connected together. The Charlie card, of course, was also the subject of an interesting issue down with some MIT students who figured out how easy it was to actually change the amount of money on these cards without by a mechanism that was somewhat more indirect, shall we say, than actually going up to the kiosk in the T station and adding cash. They were able to hack the cards as the phase goes. But that's another story. We'll save that for another time. Here's another RFID card. This is just from a couple days ago. New York State on Tuesday began offering an enhanced driver's license. Enhanced driver's license, one of a number of non-passport citizen travel documents that are making their way down bureaucratic government pipelines. Well, it looks and functions as a license for driving. Only a United States citizen can get the voluntary new license, which means it can be used for land and sea crossings in Mexico and so on. It is also a high-tech card equipped with a vicinity radio frequency ID chip that will broadcast a number to pull up biographic and biometric data for the border officer. Okay, so let's make sure we know how RFIDs work. We talk about it in a little thing in the little sidebar, half a paragraph here. But But I want to just pause here and make sure people understand what they can and can't do. Charlie card, okay? So embedded in here is a little tiny silicon chip with a big coil of wire around it. Okay, the big coil of wire serves two purposes. Okay, it's a antenna for broadcasting, and it's an antenna that's just used to generate a little bit of electric current. There's no battery inside this. But it's a fundamental principle of physics that if you move a wire through an electric field, the current starts to flow through the wire. So there's a very weak electromagnetic field around these Prox card readers, these kiosks, for example, in the thing. And when you wave the card, when you move the card near it, it generates a tiny trickle of current that's just enough to wake up the chip and cause the chip to send out a message, which then gets broadcast using the same coiled up antenna with its unique number, which the receiver part of the kiosk, little radio receiver, picks up and then communicates back to its database. The database reports whether the card is valid, how much money is left, the right amount of money gets deducted in the database, and that nice little conferring message shows on the screen in the kiosk. So that's the way these things work. Some RFIDs actually have a battery in them. I think the ones in the toll booth transponder RFIDs have a battery in them, so they actually broadcast using a little more power. But these have no. And when the RFIDs are, you know, have all kinds of useful applications. There's a book that we list in the called Spy Chips, which is actually very readable if you want to get further scared if the chapter in the class today don't scare you enough. You can read that and look at all of the ways that RFIDs are being used. Anyway, so this is interesting. I mean, there's some progress on the privacy front here, because it goes on and it says here, pull up biographic and biometric data for the border officer when you present these driver's licenses. What's good for EasyPass and Walmart is good for people too. Same information as in the front of the enhanced driver's document is in the database, says a spokesman for the New York State Department of Motor Vehicles. They're also sending, that is to say, when they give you the card, they give you a sleeve. I think what it's supposed to say, without the ID, said what it does is prevent transmission of secure numbers. So it's a tinfoil sleeve that they give you so that Ken, let's say, if he had a portable RFID reader, something like the thing that they have built into those kiosks, that he just can't sort of go around and wand your pockets, which is actually quite feasible to do. Right. Okay, but if they're if they're in the sort of tinfoil envelope, then that'll prevent the radio transmission. Assuming you kept it in the tinfoil.
And of course, U.S. passports.
Or cared.
Right.
Okay? I mean, on these kinds of things, a lot of people would say, what do I care? What do I care? And, it's something to think about. Some government agency has the information, and this information also is subpoenable, by the way. We give those examples, in the book, that the toll booth transponder records are now apparently routinely subpoenaed in divorce and child custody cases. They're just like any divorce lawyer or child or family law practitioner. You know, that's the first thing they do when you walk in and you say, you know, I want custody of my children, I'm getting a divorce, or I think my husband is you know, doing something or whatever, you try to find a basis for getting those records retrieved.
Just a quick comment. Of course, U.S. passports have RFIDs in them.
Or U.S. any recent, I guess they all, we've all had to replace them now, right.
So in theory, you could be sitting in a restaurant in a foreign country.
Right.
And somebody could come by with a reader, and even if they can't access a database, they can then walk by and see who in the room has a U.S. passport on them.
And those, there was actually, you know, some dispute about whether those should be equipped with tinfoil covers, which I don't think they are.
No. They are equipped with a cover that does block things.
They are.
No.
So keep the passport closed. don't open it up.